8:15 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, those living within the boundaries of the North Summit Recreation District will be voting November 8th whether to approve a small tax increase. On the phone to give us the details of how much and how that money would be spent if voters do approve it is Tyler Rouser. He's the Administrative Control Board member for the North Summit Recreation District. Good morning, Tyler.
Good morning.
First, just define the boundaries of this rec district. Who will be voting on this?
So the boundaries would be the same as the North Summit Fire District. So Tollgate, Rockport Estate, Colville, Hennifer City, and a little bit up Echo Canyon.
Okay, so what's actually being proposed?
Well, we're proposing a property tax of 0.000176, which equates to about $115,000 a year of taxable income for the recreation district.
So can you give us an idea of what that would be on, you know, the median house, there in that area?
Yeah, so the median house price or taxable value, $115,000 a year, or $115,000, which would be about equivalent to about $25 a year per home.
So you cut out a little bit, the $25 a year on an average home?
Yeah, $25 a year is what the tax rate, if taxed out, that top tax rate would be.
Okay, so basically on any home at $115,000, $25 plus.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Have any public information meetings been held on the proposal?
We will have one on the 24th. It's a Monday night up at the North Summit, at the county courthouse. Plus a little mailer that's going to be going out here in the mail in the next couple of weeks.
Okay. What kind of opposition have you heard, if any?
We really haven't heard of much opposition yet. I think this is a little bit easier one for people because the last proposal was a big bond looking at, you know, around $14 million. So this, people have been a little bit more accepting of this lower tax rate.
Yeah. Was there an opposition statement filed for the voter information pamphlet?
I have not seen one, but there may have been, and we just haven't seen it yet.
Okay. So you say that if approved, this would raise about $115,000 a year.
Uh-huh.
How would that money be spent?
So that would go in towards, you know, our general operation costs, you know, doing our recreation programs, as well as right now we're working with the county on possibly cooperating in the new county fairgrounds, operating as that as well.
So talk to me a little bit more about that. What does that mean, operating the fairgrounds?
So that would mean we'd have a part of that where we're looking at potentially doing some of the cost of building that out, as well as operating and maintaining that as well for what the recreation district uses, like the baseball fields and that are proposed to go in there.
Okay, so do you tell me about some of the plans that you've seen for the fairgrounds?
The fairgrounds plans, I mean, there was a meeting last week, a very informative meeting, and let the people look at it. We'll see a new, they're proposing a new multi-purpose building, a new softball field and two potential soccer fields over there, along with new rodeo facilities and playground facilities.
So if you helped with the construction of those, then that would mean you would receive some of the profits of the fair, if any?
No, we'd have nothing to do with the fair. It would just be dealing with recreation for ourselves and, you know, those kind of things.
All right. When you talk about recreation programs, what are you looking at there that need help?
So we
with?
Have our youth recreation, our softball, baseball, soccer, flag football, those kind of things. We're looking more to expand more into our adult recreation. This year we started a men's softball league. It was a great success. I think they wanted to play longer than the schedule even went on. So that was a great thing, and it's a great community turnout too to help our community. We're looking to expand more of that, more trails, those kind of things.
Okay, so do you guys have a master plan then moving forward so people would understand where money would be spent?
Yeah, we're working on that right now, and we'll have those kind of things for the meeting on the 24th.
All right. Where's that meeting again? You said the Summit County Council?
The Summit County Courthouse, yeah.
Okay. What time?
I believe it's at 7 o'clock.
All right. Well, many people in the district are on fixed income, some perhaps even too old to join these recreation programs. How are you going to convince them that this is the right thing to do?
Well, actually, we're looking at called Silver Shoes. It's a program for the elderly people to be able to get out and do some exercises with it's kind of an aerobics type class, but it's designed for the older people so it's not as intense, but it's to get them out and be active as well. We're looking at all ages of what we're doing.
Okay, so they won't be left out.
Nope, they won't be left out.
Okay. And as you kind of referenced, the rec district tried to get a bond approved a few years ago, went down to a big defeat. Why do you think this would be different?
Like I said, this is a much lower price tag for this. People are looking at hundreds of dollars a year on that bond issue, plus then having to pay to even use the facility beyond your property taxes. Where this is a much smaller amount, it's more just for operating and maintenance of the district and moving things forward that way.
Okay, anything else you think people ought to know?
Like I said, we have this public meeting that's going to be coming up. Be able to question and answer type thing. That'd be a good place to get your questions answered if you have any, and just to come out and see what we have planned.
Okay, Tyler Rouser is the on the Administrative Control Board for the North Summit Recreation District. Thanks for your time this morning.
Yep, thank you, Leslie.
KPCW News Time 8:22.
Hi, this is Lauren Forsyth with Christopher K. Greenwood & Associates, supporting my hometown radio station, KPCW. Christopher K. Greenwood & Associates offers legal services in criminal, DUI, family, divorce, personal injury, and real estate. Christopher K. Greenwood & Associates at the Gateway Center, 655-3680.
Still to come, we'll be talking with Park City Assistant Manager Matt Dias later on in the hour. David Hederle-Smith and Scott Pepper with Sunrise Rotary, and to talk about Saturday's Hazardous Household Collection event. Finally, scheduled to talk with Mark Andes, one of the original band members of Firefall. They'll be performing Monday night at the Egyptian Theater to celebrate the theater's 35th anniversary. Stay tuned.
This is Dena Fleming with Berkshire Hathaway Home Services Utah Properties. Our team, Chim McQuaid Fleming Harris, loves supporting and listening to KPCW and for helping us find our lost pets and cell phones. Our local information is DeerValleyRealEstate.com or 647-8035.
A former employee of a Main Street restaurant who admitted stealing expensive wine during an armed robbery has been sentenced to prison. 46-year-old Christopher Schutz pleaded guilty in August to robbery and attempted aggravated burglary charges, both second-degree felonies. An unlawful detention count was dismissed as part of the plea deal. On Monday, 3rd District Court Judge Paige Peterson sentenced Schutz to prison for up to 15 years. Schutz had been fired from Flanagan's Irish Pub and Restaurant back in 2014. He was accused of robbery in the eatery on March 27, 2015. Police say while he was in the process of loading bottles of wine into a duffel bag, it was when an employee spotted him in the basement. Schutz pulled out a revolver when confronted by the employee. He fled through a back door into the alley with that duffel bag of wine. News Time 8:24.
Hi, this is Carla Lehigh, designer at Elliott Workgroup and longtime KPCW listener. Our design team offers complete architectural, interior, planning, and sustainable design services for historic, commercial, hospitality, affordable housing, and sports projects throughout Park City and the Mountain West. ElliottWorkgroup.com.
Proudly supporting KPCW, Cushman & Wakefield Commerce offers commercial real estate services, including property management and valuation, for companies and investors throughout the Intermountain West. Located at Kimball Junction in the Park City Tech Center, we can be reached at 435-575-5600 or online at comre.com.
It's 8:25 now. Good morning. Well, coming up November 8th, Park City residents will be asked if they will support a multimillion-dollar bond to purchase more open space. KPCW's Melissa Allison has more on that.
Utah Open Lands support the $25 million bond to purchase Bonanza Flats, the 1,300 acres of land at the top of Guardsman Pass. Open Lands Director Wendy Fisher says the preserved property will be enjoyed by not only Summit County residents, but Wasatch and Salt Lake County residents as well. Bonanza Flats caught the eye of Utah Open Lands when they were working to preserve the Snake Creek Canyon, just over the pass in Wasatch County. Fisher says they're now working with other organizations who share their vision.
Interestingly, you know, all of the impacts from development in Bonanza Flats, I think, really would end up being felt mostly by the Park City community. So we're actually partnering with the Wasatch Backcountry Alliance to hold an event to get Wasatch Front and Wasatch Back people who don't live in the immediate vicinity of the Park City city limits to help out by pledging their support for Bonanza should it become available for protection.
Fisher says they're also working with Summit Land Conservancy, who are helping to publicize the bond so that they're not a day late and a dollar short.
Like so many open spaces that we've all tried to acquire and that we cherish, you know, they're not always available for purchase as open space, but if you don't have the funds when that opportunity comes available.
Park City doesn't even know if Bonanza Flats will be available for sale. The high-end development company is reportedly interested in the acreage, which is now owned by the lenders who foreclosed on the property once owned by the Talisker Corporation. A purchase price has yet to be determined, but Fisher says by beginning the process now, those in the position of making the purchase a reality will have no doubt as to the devotion of the communities it would serve. I'm Melissa Allison, KPCW News.
KPCW News time now, 8:26. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, the Park City Council meeting and work session starting at 4 o'clock tomorrow. In the studio with me, I have Assistant City Manager Matt Dias joining us in just a little bit. We believe Clint McAfee, who will be telling us more about the proposed public utilities and street facility that will be discussed in work session starting at 4:15. But also in work session, Matt, Council will get kind of a debrief of the 4th of July. The biggest issue seems to be that we don't have an applicant anymore. So who's going to take this over?
Well, we're in the process of discussing that. This is obviously a very, very important event to our community. It's one of our largest events, too. I think it ranks in the top five. So I think that irrespective of who is ultimately the applicant, I think for years it had been the ambassadors, which was a group of volunteers, and over time that group of volunteers has either changed or their interest has changed. Although, you know, many of them are still involved, I think we'll always ensure that event happens here, and whether it's the city or someone else, that's a very important celebration for this community. And so I don't think you'll see that go anywhere, but our team is interested in talking with council just about how successful we thought this past year was. We obviously did new things in terms of transportation and parking and the parade itself and the number of floats. And so we're really excited to share some of that information that we think worked better this year compared to previous years.
Well, the event cost city taxpayers $105,000 this year, plus the city waives another $45,000 in fees. So, I mean, I guess the question is, you're telling me that there's no discussion on whether or not this event is public, given that we get some 30,000 people showing up for the event with a town of, 8,000 full-time residents? I mean, who are we doing this for?
No, I mean, that's a wonderful question. I mean, obviously, the 4th of July is our nation's holiday, and I think we'd be hard-pressed to find, you know, a city or town like ourselves that sort of invites the world and is tourist-driven in our economy that didn't want to celebrate and didn't want to be the leader and at the forefront of this. That being said, the points that you make about the cost of the event are the points well taken, and I think council is very aware of that. And so we may see some additional changes about are there fees that we don't have to waive, or perhaps there's some, you know, primary parking that we could start charging for to offset some of the expenses in the event. And I think those are the things that you're going to start to see with events and other things in our town over the next, let's say, decade or two, where we do try to offset some of these costs. But I can't picture a way that we wouldn't try to celebrate the 4th of July here in our community and that the city wouldn't play a major role in that.
Yeah, but I guess, I mean, we could just have a parade and be done with it, no? And then have fireworks at night. I mean, it seems like the the impact comes with what happens after the parade.
No, we could, and I think that's the reason it's on the agenda, to be honest. I think that this is a wonderful opportunity for business owners or people in the community, parents, kids, students. If people are concerned about that, and that's the reason that council asks for this debrief. That's the reason that we put it on the agenda. So tonight, I'm sorry, not tonight, Thursday night would be a wonderful opportunity if people do have those concerns to come share them with staff and share them with council, and that will help inform the policy decisions that our elected officials make.
So the council just, I mean, do decisions need to be made going forward here? I mean, we've decided that we are going to take on this event and continue to pay, you know, the fees associated with it.
I think for the time being, I think that staff and I can't imagine a major change overnight. But again, you know, part of this is the public process. I think council is trying to create a dialogue. They're creating a vehicle, an open meeting, a public hearing where people can come and share their thoughts on it. And so this event may evolve over time. If we look back 7 years from now, I may regret some of the things I'm saying on this interview if they wanted to change given where the public sentiment was. But I think that right now, you know, public sentiment is this is a wonderful event. There are some things that we need to do to increase to better mitigate some of the impacts. But I think for all intents and purposes, we had a very, very successful event. I think that the word that I heard around town is it felt a little bit funkier. The vibe felt a little bit more local. There was a wonderful wedding float, and people just thought that was a hoot in the middle of it that really had this local aspect to it. And so we're sort of proud of this last year. We ramped up our parking resources, our parking management. We ran dedicated bus-only lanes, and we think we had a wonderful celebration.
Okay. Back up a little bit. Starting at 4:15 in work session, the council will get have a discussion with regards to the proposed public utilities and street facility. In the studio with me, I have the director of public utilities, Clint McAfee, also a new father. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you.
You don't have bags under your eyes. You're doing good.
Oh, yeah. I'm hiding it well, then.
So, again, the council voted back in August to build it. I mean, we already have a public works building. So what is this?
Yeah, so this is part of a kind of a repurposing of other facilities within the city. The public works facility, as you just mentioned, is primarily a transit facility, storage of buses, maintenance of buses, as well as our general fleet maintenance for the city fleet. And so as our transportation system starts to grow, more and more buses come online with different needs, such as electric buses, that need will start to require more and more space at that site. And so what little space public utilities and streets already has there is kind of being targeted by transportation, one of council's critical priorities. The other two facilities that are being repurposed are currently the Park Ave fire station. What used to be a fire station is now we use as storage for key equipment for streets. Parks, it's kind of a catch-all, fairly large storage facility. That's being considered for a site for affordable housing next year. So that's going away. And then the third piece of this is the Spiro, I'll call it a campus, over on the golf course where we have a water treatment plant, a golf maintenance facility, and a parks maintenance facility. The year 2020, we're going to be leveling that entire site, you know, staying within the fairways of the golf course and rebuilding a water treatment plant on the entire footprint of what exists now. And so really those three things are creating the need for a new operational complex. And I would say just in general, we're kind of squeezed in the spaces that we're already at. And so this new facility will house the functions of water, streets, and stormwater, both operational, storage, staging, administration. And the site is located just northwest of the existing Quinns Water Treatment Plant, just across the highway, 248.
Okay, so how big is it going to be? And the reason I ask is that I still think that we ruined one of the most bucolic view sheds in Park City when we built that water treatment plant, but you know, nobody listened. So it's going to, I mean, how much bigger is it going to be?
So I think it'll be in you know, similar scale and mass to the treatment plant. It certainly won't be as high in terms of building height of the treatment plant, but it'll approach a similar height. And we're also looking at a water storage facility on that site and a future footprint for water treatment on that site. You kind of hit it on the head there. We really are just running out of space in the city, and so this is kind of getting ahead of the game and locating a facility central enough that we can provide the services that we do. And it is on one of the entry corridors, and I think that entry corridor is over time kind of transitioned into just that, a kind of a community transition zone with other similar type buildings.
Yeah. So what kind of water storage are you talking about?
So it's kind of a day, day's worth of storage, 3 to 5 million gallons. It's not a big water storage facility. It's more of a buffer that could carry us through a 24-hour or 48-hour outage.
So in a tank or there where
open water?
Because there's a big pond.
It'll be fenced off, no public access. The next step for this water would be through treatment and into the drinking water system. So we're going to keep it closed off.
Okay. How much is it going to cost and how is it going to be paid for?
So we currently have an approved budget for this facility of about $14.8 million. That was based on a preliminary estimate about 18 months ago that we conducted. So that was kind of a placeholder for budget. We feel like we're pretty close. So that includes removing a pile of dirt out there. There's about 30,000 yards we need to move that was staged there as a result of a bunch of different city projects. And then we have the pond facility. We're putting a micro hydro station into the pond so we can catch all the energy coming out of Rockport. And then the water streets and stormwater facilities.
Okay.
And there are several funding sources, the water fund, the stormwater fund, transit fund is kicking in because they're essentially buying us out of the public works facility. Same with the RDA fund, buying us out of the Park Ave facility, and the general fund as well is kicking in.
Okay, let's move on to another work session item, Matt, the Main Street tenant mix. Reading from the staff report, success has created some unintended consequences to Main Street. And what we're seeing is that several high-profile properties are staying vacant for longer periods of time in spite of the strong economy. Staff is speculating that maybe some of the vacancies are the result of intentional business decisions where the building owner just allows the building to remain vacant the majority of the year just to take advantage of the high-dollar, shorter-term hospitality rentals, especially during Sundance. So what do we do?
Staff is coming back to discuss the matter with City Council. I know that this has been part of the dialogue, particularly in the Main Street core for probably at least a year now. And I think this is truly a problem unique to Park City. I think this is, you know, just a very unique circumstance that we probably wouldn't have been able to contemplate with our existing regulations, that people would find it advantageous to maintain sort of a vacant storefront to then only rent at certain times of the year. But that being said, this update's twofold. Jonathan Weidenheimer, the economic development manager, and Mayor Thomas have been doing some work in the background, working with property owners, making calls and meeting with people. And so there are some positive updates that Jonathan will bring to the City Council at the meeting, where there's a few property owners in particular in some of the larger buildings that people are most familiar with that are vacant that will be bringing or are likely to bring in new tenants year-round. And then we'll obviously convert for special event purposes to something else. And that just worked through the mayor and a staff member saying, hey, you know, this is a growing chorus of concern in our community. Is this an intentional decision? Do you understand how this impacts sort of the rhythm and vibrancy of Main Street every day? And to be honest, the property owners were very, very receptive. So that's sort of part one, is that there is some good news to share through the work of Jonathan and the mayor. And then part two is there are some regulatory tools, or there's one tool in particular, which we would attempt to sort of prohibit the conversion from a regular business license to a special license for a special event purpose or a short-term rental. So there is a twofold update. One is sort of good news. The property owners have been very receptive in two of sort of the most prominent properties. And then there is a regulatory tool that we could attempt to amend the code to try to prevent this from happening in the future.
Okay. Basically, this would happen after Sundance 2017, and you would not give them a business license to do a hospitality party without proof of year-round occupancy.
It could, and I think that's the recommendation from the Economic Development Department, that if we were to use this regulatory tool, if we were to ratchet this up another level with sort of bringing this on board, that they would not recommend it prior to this year's festival out of respect for just notification of the business owners and giving them, you know, time to actually contemplate the regulation and determine their next steps and to be fair to them.
So one of the businesses that we had heard about is that the Claim Jumper building is talking about putting an art gallery in year-round. And I guess that begs the question, when we start talking about tenant mix, do we really need another art gallery on Main Street?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'm not going to speculate on that. I'm not going to take an opinion on what type of business is the appropriate business. But I will say that, you know, these businesses do turn over. And, I mean, what we have today may not be what we end up there with long term. It's obviously a very prominent property. We obviously want it to be occupied. We want that rhythm and vibrancy on Main Street. And if this is a start, I think this is a good step in the right direction. It was a very responsive property owner who isn't actually local, who's out of town, but was still willing to, you know, take the mayor's call and have a lengthy discussion with the mayor and John about what we were trying to accomplish. And we were just very, very happy that it was so warmly received and it wasn't considered adversarial or anything like that. So,
all right. The voter information pamphlet related to the Bonanza Flat open space bond will be discussed in the packet. Can you tell us what's the status of this? I mean, have we met with the lenders? Do we know if the development company is still interested in the land?
We probably have the similar information, to be honest. We know that the developer is still looking at the land. We don't have information about whether or not they've made a decision. So we are still carrying through with existing council direction, which is to put the city in a position to preserve that property should it become available. And to do so, we obviously need to bond, and we are requesting authorization from the voters for a $25 million bond for this property only. As the community knows, for the benefit of the listeners, this is about 1,400 acres at the top of Guardsman Pass, kind of on the backside of Deer Valley. It abuts Salt Lake County and Wasatch County as well. And we have two public hearings coming up. So if the community is interested in about it, if people want to know more about this, October 20th and November 3rd, both of those council meetings will include a public hearing on this issue. There'll be probably a brief staff presentation, and that would be a wonderful opportunity for people to come find out what's going on. In addition to that, in this week's meeting, we have the voter information pamphlet, which is by state statute. We are required to create this voter information pamphlet, which has lots of information about the property, about how much it's going to cost, about how much the property tax increase, what that would equate to for a primary resident or a business or a secondary resident. And so that information is in this week's staff report.
So the bond is for $25 million. Since the land isn't even for sale at this point, we don't know if that's going to be enough or not. So what, if anything, are we doing to perhaps make up the difference if, in fact, the land does become available?
Well, encouragingly, we've had a lot of people interested. We've had other governmental entities. We've had some private entities, some land preservation, nonprofits. And so I think that people are encouraged that we are putting ourselves in a position should this property become available. I think clearly we'll need some assistance, and I think we've been very happy with people sort of raising their hand and saying, you know, we like what you're doing. We also have an interest here. I don't think we have anything definitive yet, but we've clearly got some partners in this effort. We know how important open space is to this community, this greater Park City community, and so we're very encouraged by that.
Okay, Matt Dias and Clint McAfee, thanks for coming in.
Thanks.
KPCW News Time now, 8:43. Still to come, we'll be talking with folks from Sunrise Rotary, talking about Saturday's Hazardous Household Collection event. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPC Saturday. Well, Recycle Utah and the Snyderville Basin Water Reclamation District are hosting the biannual Hazardous Household Collection Day on Saturday. It's all made possible with the help of the members of Sunrise Rotary Club. One of the members joins me now in the studio with details, David Hedley-Smith. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Leslie.
So I mentioned Saturday.
Saturday morning, starting at 9 o'clock and running until 1 o'clock at the lower parking lot at the Canyons, just next to the Cabriolet station where you get on, just off Highway 224. and there will be signs directing people.
Okay. And this is, like I mentioned, I mean, it's the volunteers of Sunrise Rotary who make this all happen. Huh?
Well, we provide the manpower. Frankly, the city puts in a fair bit of money. The water, the sewer district puts in a fair bit of money. The county puts in a fair bit of money. It's a $20,000 or $30,000 operation to get rid of all this stuff. But the idea is to keep these things out of our water.
Okay, so what do you guys collect?
Oh, I've got a shopping list here. And I'd like to go through it. We collect all that nasty stuff: paints, varnishes, solvents, motor oil, antifreeze, brake fluids, transmission fluids, car batteries, gasoline, household cleaners, fertilizers, pesticides, herbicides, rechargeable batteries and batteries, pool and spa chemicals, propane, white gas cylinders, film developing chemicals and acids, compact fluorescent bulbs, and any fluorescent bulbs for that matter. We take e-waste. This is a good chance to unload those old computers and monitors. We take cell phones. We take laptops. We take pharmaceuticals, which are certainly on Park City's mind these days. I think it's the county sheriff's department's there. It might be the city police. Anyhow, they collect, 20 or 30 gallons of pills every time we do this, and I'll bet they'll get 50 gallons this time. We take mercury items, thermostats and whatnot, thermometers, smoke detectors. This is all stuff that just shouldn't go into our landfill. Our landfill is basically perched above Rockport Reservoir, which is where a lot of our drinking water comes from. I tell people it's a real testament to the land use planning of the 70s around here. And it's stuff that otherwise goes down your toilet and ends up at the sewer plant. And, they take everything else out, but they can't get a lot of this stuff out of the water. It ends up going back into the creeks.
So with the exception of maybe nuclear waste, you'll take everything except not furniture or mattresses, things like that.
We're taking mattresses. They're going to charge you $10 a piece, but they'll recycle them. We don't take nuclear waste. We don't take explosives either. We'd rather not blow anybody up. We also, as we're on things we'd like people not to do, we'd rather you not bring your dog along. It's just not a good place for a dog. There's a lot of nasty stuff there. Just about every time, we do this every 6 months, and just about every time a dog does get loose, and, we have to be real careful that he doesn't get in back where we have professionals in, sort of white suits looking like the hazmat crew dealing with all these hazmat materials. We're out front. We're wearing ugly green T-shirts. And the idea, I'll just go through this, is you drive up, we'll bring you through and just move you through move your car through. We don't even want you to get out of your car. We have people there to unload everything. We want to keep things moving. When people get out of their car, obviously it slows things down, and we just like to move everyone through. We expect about 500 cars in the 4 hours.
So what's the best thing for people to do is maybe just use their just boxes of, put their paints in one thing, pills in another, or does it need to be separated?
No, it doesn't. Well, it will need to be separated, but if we need to, we'll separate it too. We have different stations. The first one will take paints and chemicals. The next one will take motor oil. And then further down the way, we'll be taking the e-waste and the batteries. The police department will have a trailer there. They'll be taking the pharmaceuticals. They don't let us Rotarians handle that stuff. Although there is a local Boy Scout who's got an Eagle Scout project on this. He's going to be working with them this year on the pharmaceuticals.
Great. You mentioned there's no cost except for mattresses. What about for the e-waste? Because there usually is a charge for that.
No, we don't have any cost except we very gladly accept donations. And the donations, we'll tell you, they get split between the Rotary and Recycle Utah. Recycle Utah spends it on recycling. Our Rotary Club has a really good business plan. We give it away to all the other nonprofits here in town.
Okay, so you say you do it twice a year, and they're pretty set dates, right? So
yeah, we do it in October every year and in May. And so if you can't make it on Saturday, just keep that stuff in a corner of your garage and save it for us for May. Don't throw it out in your garbage, and don't flush it down the toilet. We'll be back in May, and we'd be happy to take it then.
Okay. They're at the Canyons Cabriolet parking lot, 9 to 1 o'clock.
9 to 1 Saturday. Come in at 5 past 1, and we may not be there.
Okay. David, thank you.
Thank you very much, Leslie.
David Hedley-Smith with Sunrise Rotary. KPCW News Time, 8:50. You're listening to the local...